Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again and welcome. We have cake, so there may be a little bit of muffle, which will be very nice. It's still so good to see you, be in your company.
Yeah. Doesn't get old, does it?
It doesn't get old. It really doesn't. And hugs don't get old either. Today I want to talk about the vagus gland.
Hurrah. Nerve, you mean?
Oh, yeah. And we will be restarting this. No, we won't. Channeling my mother. The vagus nerve, yes. I've been reading this book, which I heartily recommend to anyone who's ever been afraid of a terminal illness or a deeply chronic illness or experiencing one or who has recovered from one. It's called Cured and it's by Dr. Jeff Rediger. It's published by Penguin and it's... I'm so glad I found it. I found it pretty much by accident, and I don't know how I got led to it, but that's often the way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Reading this book told me how I recovered from cancer, because I honestly didn't know.
Okay.
And what he does is he started researching spontaneous remissions, people who should have died and just didn't. Mm-hmm. Because there really isn't any research, because there's no money in it.
Indeed.
And you have
nothing for big pharma to make that.
Absolutely no money for anybody to make in why people get better without the medicines, yeah, or with a certain amount of the medicines. Because what's really good about this is he's a Harvard Medical School professor. So he's orthodox as well as seeking.
Right.
Okay. Which is actually very helpful for the... He's got all the science in there as well. So if I talk to somebody about this book, they're not going to be able to say, oh, that's all just spiritual wanky bollocks. I'd say, no, there's pure proven biology behind this. Mm. And basically he's worked out that it's belief and love.
Okay.
There's more to it than that, but the book just chronicles years of research. If you're talking to dozens and dozens of people who had remissions, mm-hmm, and stayed well. And what they did, and he's collated it, and he's practiced it himself, and he's been to places like John of God, mm-hmm, and he's looked at basically, if you have something like this, you have to go on a pilgrimage to transform yourself, which comes back to the transmit or transform.
Yep.
And illness appears to be something that's transmitting itself in you because it hasn't been transformed. Mm-hmm. And that can be an external virus, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It can be transformed by allopathic drugs sometimes, and sometimes it can't.
Yeah.
But what the thing that just made me go, whoa, and there were lots of woes in this, was all about the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve, it's a nerve. How much do you know about it?
Because I know it's a nerve, and I know that it's kind of, in some ways, a bit like the pituitary gland in a way, or is it the pineal? I can never remember which way around it is. But in that, it's kind of the vagus nerve is on a par with that, because that's the master gland for the endocrine system. Yeah. The vagus nerve is a kind of master nerve for pretty much everything. And that I know very little, so in some ways it's pointless me carrying on, but I believe that somehow stimulating the vagus nerve or kind of making offerings to it almost,
yeah,
seems to be the route to excellent physical health.
Yeah, absolutely. It basically does connect those two glands, and it comes through the brainstem, mm-hmm, down through the heart. But the vagus means wanderer. The nerve goes all through the body. It goes down through the heart and into the gut, but it also connects through the whole of the nervous system. And it's what tells the brain what's going on in your body,
uh-huh,
including gut feelings.
Yeah.
And intuitions.
Well, that is another brain.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. But the vagus nerve is the communication system, and 80% of it is communicating to the brain what's going on, and 20% is the brain instructing.
Sending messages back.
But what he's found out about it is that it goes through the stomach, the spleen, the liver, the kidneys. It is essential for calming organs after fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
It dissolves inflammation. And it's fueled by love.
Yay.
And that's biologically proven now. They put people in MRIs and monitored their vagus nerve while putting them through experiences of feeling love or not. And they can see the corresponding bodies results in the body.
Don't you just love how unscientific science is getting?
Isn't it just wonderful? There was one story about a guy who went through an MRI and came out healed. His cancer went away.
Oh, that's having gone wonderful. Through the MRI.
Because when he was in the MRI, something they said to him, he was very frightened by the claustrophobic aspect. So he really focused down on sometimes it takes such an experience to get you to focus into love.
Yeah.
To think of something that he really loved, a memory that he really loved. And he got completely into that memory. And it was enough to stimulate the vagus gland to take away the tumours.
Woohoo!
I mean, that's the most dramatic one. But he also talks about things like sometimes a vaccination can heal you. Now, that's anathema to a lot of holistic folk, but I've seen this in a friend of mine who's had chronic fatigue for years and years and years and years and years and years. She had the AstraZeneca, mm-hmm. or was it the Pfizer, I don't know which, and it went.
Glorious.
So something in that spiked to her immune system. Yeah. It made her so happy to have the vaccine, no matter what the vaccine had in it, that having of it made her feel so happy and so safe.
Yeah.
That it was sufficient to do.
To
dissolve.
Switch on the. Oh, don't you just love it?
I don't know if it'll last because, you know, you've got to.
Oh, don't say that.
I hope it will, but yeah. You have to replace the thought systems that create the inflammation, obviously.
Yeah.
And she is a bit of a worrier, but just this scientific confirmation, it's ridiculous that we need it. It's so lovely that love is the answer. Love is the healer.
Totally it is. But also, I really want to. Oh, I want to call you to account, and then I want you to call me to account on whether or not I'm just being a ridiculous Pollyanna. I want to say to you, please, Maggie, don't say she's a worrier, and don't say...
You're quite right.
Because you and she and I, we are all interwoven with the rivers and the trees and the...
And usually, you know, I'm absolutely with you on that. And sometimes when I'm doing a broadcast or something, I tend to dissemble a bit because I don't want to be thought to be a Pollyanna too. But you're absolutely right. Yes. Jesus helped people get healed by just looking at them as perfect. So I apologise. She's perfect.
Yeah.
She stays that way. She stays fully
mended.
Healed.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right then.
That's all right then. But no, it's a very, very valuable thing because one of the things I have to watch, having this sort of space in my life from the physical absence and the psychological absence of a mother, mm-hmm. is what's going to fill that space.
Yep.
And as I had an issue with her, and I'll own up to it absolutely, worked as hard as I could with it, never quite cleared it, then I have space for another issue.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Can I pass you the issue menu?
So I'm trying to work very hard with the vagus gland to ensure that habit of a negativity, which you've called on me beautifully, thank you, doesn't replace the habit, another habit of negativity. Because it will. You know, if we're used to thinking the same things, we will find somebody else to have those habits with.
Yeah. So, genuinely, I want to pass you the menu, but not of negativity, and say that once upon a time I was aware of having a really super bad kind of story, I guess, ultimately, around a particular relationship. Mm. And so, understanding that will is the fundamental mover, if you like, will is the vagus nerve in the story of our lives, that what I needed to do was to replace that story with something else completely. And so I elected to view the individual with whom I had difficulty as the moon, and that because I love the moon and I love her changeability and her phases and her silvery light and her power over, you know, tides and water and her measuring of time that is so exquisitely feminine.
Yes.
I channeled all of my love of the moon and all of my ever-changing and ever-moving relationship with the moon into that relationship with a human that was had gone so wrong.
Yeah.
And through that, managed to keep coming back to, but I love the moon.
Mm.
And so I invite you to fall in love with something that you know will keep bringing you back every time I just said something negative. I heard myself, blah, blah, blah. Pull it back round to, but I love the sweet pea plant or whatever it is.
Yeah, I have to adapt that one because my call back to is to Dartmoor and we don't know where we're going to be living soon. So there's a little bit of regret in that. So that's worth noting as possibly dangerous.
Indeed. And can I also point out that it's pointless regretting something that hasn't happened yet. What a waste of energy.
I'm going to go sit in the corner and be so thoroughly told off today.
Well, and also that you're going to be accidentally creating a self-fulfilling prophecy if you start regretting moving off Dartmoor when you still live here.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So how do I stop it?
Start looking for somewhere to rent on Dartmoor?
We are.
Oh, good.
Yes.
And put it, you know, in your words, into the hands of God and look and look and look and look and look, but also trust.
But, you know, this is fascinating because that's exactly what I am doing and what I'm telling people I'm doing. But suddenly sitting with you, I mean, some doubts are coming out, aren't they?
Do I bring out the worst in you, Megan?
No, I think what you're doing is helping me highlight exactly what I've been talking about, which is little unrecognised spots of negativity which are trying to find a place because there is a...
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. I have never, ever failed to find a lovely, perfect house to live in.
There you are, then. Yeah. Let's stick with that version of reality.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. We're going to see one tomorrow, which is, I think, too far away. But I'm okay with that because it starts the search going.
Cool.
Do you know what I mean? It starts the ball rolling. So we actually we don't want to live there. We do want to live here. Mm. We do want this. But on the other hand, I'm also open to where God wants me to be. I want to be here. And that's, as we were talking about last time, my will, here please.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, thy will.
Yeah. You know, I'm open to persuasion.
Yes, exactly. If you've got something better up your sleeve, fair enough.
Yeah.
But if you haven't actually currently got anything better up your sleeve, can we stay here, please?
Yeah. Great. Yeah, there's a beautiful phrase, isn't there, which is, I will that my will be thy will.
Yes. Well, I've been trying to explain this on the Sacred Magic of the Angels course, because there's such a valid question which I had to start with is, why do you need to petition angels? Why can't you just be in relationship with the Great Mother, the Holy One, whatever you want to call it? Well, you can, of course, but the thing is, we humans are so complex, and angels are purely message energies anyway. They're the ones that carry the prayers or the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Because the great everythingness is vast.
Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to direct something.
And if all it is love, it's beaming grace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's us that's not open to it. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're not open to it is because we're so confused. So basically what's happening is that the message is transmitted up by a cosmic hierarchy. So if you're sending the message yourself, it's basically along the lines of, oh God, I really, really want more money. I need more money. I need a better job. But I really don't like my job. I don't want another job like my job. I need a better job. I really wanted to be a writer, but I can't be a writer because it doesn't make a living. I really need more money. I need this. And the messenger's going, what? what would you want? You want more money, but you don't want this. And I'm just confused. So sometimes when we pray, our messages are so confused that they really can't get through. And even if they do get through, the Holy One just sends love.
Mm.
And the love might be, you see a feather and you feel happy, or the love might be an animal cuddle. You have a cuddle with an animal. The only one's always sending love. But if you haven't said, this area, focus, please.
Yeah.
Then you're not receiving in that area yourself.
If you are not offering clarity, you cannot receive clarity.
So the Sacred Magic of Angels is really complicated. It teaches you to write a letter to be carried by an angel in a different alphabet, which means it's difficult, mm-hmm. has to be done in a sacred space. It means you keep the petition bloody short and concise,
yeah.
Which means the appropriate angel that does that Angel of Prosperity, maybe,
mm-hmm.
picks it up, takes it up to the Archangel, takes it up to the next level, takes it up to the next level, and all the angelic levels get it because it's so clear.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes up to the great love and focuses that love back down on that. And when I realised that, I thought, okay, that makes sense. It's only because we're daft that we need this.
Exactly the same in shamanic journeying. So if you like, the angel becomes a power animal, an ally,
yeah.
a body protector,
yeah.
an upper world tutelary spirit who may or may not look exactly like an angel, in
yeah.
fact. And that once you've honed your question down to total and utter clarity, have recognised that it must be, that there must be the partnership with the
yeah.
spirits, that your will is in partnership with
yes.
them,
yes.
your imagination is in service to that message,
yes.
that by offering that clarity and
yes.
that kind of question, you will receive back the answer with exactly the same degree of clarity.
Yes.
And that, yes, the manifestation of the spirit who you are asking is effectively the same as the manifestation of the angel.
Yeah.
It is the face that we can talk to
yes.
that gives us the capacity to hone our question and speak to one tree rather than the whole forest.
Yes.
Because we have so much more of a sense of there being clarity if we are speaking to one tree
yes.
rather than the whole of this whole
yes.
of the forest. And of there being connection and communication.
Yes, this connection, this vagus gland thing brought me right back to the mycelium, you know,
mm-hmm.
all the little fungi under the ground that link all the trees, so the trees talk to each other and in total relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they were trying to express in Avatar, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The movie.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah.
That whole idea. And the vagus gland is our mycelium, if you like. It's
mm-hmm.
it's the communication system between all of us. So if we're going around going, we're just disempowering it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you tell that to people without being accused of being Pollyanna?
Well, do you know what? I was about to say exactly that. Not how do you tell that to people without being accused of being Pollyanna, but how amazing is it to be Pollyanna?
Mm.
You know, as long as our heads aren't up our collective backsides,
mm.
then I would suggest that Pollyanna is a pretty good way to be, as long as Pollyanna's not in denial. Pollyanna needs to be in connection.
Yes.
So if Pollyanna is always seeing the glass half full, the sunshine between the clouds, the joy, the love, the utter, utter, utter beauty of the world,
yeah.
then she's feeding the vagus nerve. Whereas
yes.
if Pollyanna has got her fingers over her eyes and her palms over her ears and is just going, no, 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 everything's fine, then that's something else entirely.
It is something else entirely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why sometimes you do have to voice the negativity to have it honoured and heard, and then you can move on.
Mm-hmm.
But was it the Native Americans who talked about expressing something only three times? You were allowed to tell a story three times to express it, to get it out of your system, and then you had to shut up about it.
Mm.
Otherwise, you just made it real.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. I know definitely within the kind of, I don't know, the elders of, I guess, my family is all I can talk about, is that if something really horrid happened to you, you would tell the tale pretty much once.
Mm.
And once you had told the tale, that was it. That was the end of it.
Mm.
And that wasn't denial. That was exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
It was, well, this is mine and it's private. And I refuse to make it my identity.
Yeah.
My identity is something else, which
yeah.
means my reality. What is it? Bruce Lipton, your biography
yes,
becomes your biology.
Yes.
Only if you let it, and
yeah.
only if you focus on the negative aspects of your biography.
Yeah.
Your biography, well, exactly as your mother is potentially very ably proving through her biography, that it's what you focus on that becomes the biography, not
mm.
necessarily what happened. And even more importantly, what did you make it mean?
Yes.
When that thing happened.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's the same for do we or don't we suffer soul loss when a, you know, bad thing, a potentially
mm.
shocking thing, a traumatic thing happened,
mm.
is that one person's trauma is another person's just another Saturday.
Yes.
Because it's all about the story.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That was the one difficult thing about people saying, oh, I don't know how you could do this when I was doing my mother's funeral, because the energy of it's what I do wasn't, and I wasn't going to drop my energy. This is another thing that we had to be very careful about. It may look as that make us look very arrogant, but you, if you are trying to help somebody, you can't drop your energy to their level.
Yeah.
Because if you drop your energy to their level, you've got nothing to raise them up to. And that's what we do an awful lot. And a lot of empathetic people do this, is they sit and sympathise with the person and drop their energy to there. And there's a temporary comfort in that. Mm-hmm. I know, but it doesn't transform, does it?
No. Well, it means that you have entered their space rather than inviting them to enter yours.
Yes.
And if their space is broken and yours was...
relatively not.
Relatively not broken, or just more empowered.
Yes.
More able to focus will, for example, then, yeah, you've done them no service whatsoever. No. Other than, yes, like you say, temporary fraternity.
Yeah. There was a lady who phoned my mother at 4 o'clock every day to moan. And my mother listened to her and complained about her every time. And you could see this cycle of she was just maintaining the other woman's misery. She was doing it because she thought it was the kind thing to do. And in our modern culture, that is the kind thing to do. But in fact, when you keep somebody on a maintaining plan of misery, it actually just becomes a declining, continuing plan of misery.
Mm.
And it was fascinating because this woman now has nobody to call at 4 o'clock. And there is a terrible temptation to say, you can call me, but I'm not doing it.
Don't do it.
Absolutely not. But it's what my mother would like me to do.
Yeah.
But nope. Sorry. I'm sorry, lady. You've got to fall on your own reconnaissance now. And that's really tough, isn't it?
It is tough. But yeah. there's so much to be said for, again, we're back to the will, aren't we?
Mm.
But the will gets, I guess, perhaps accurately or perhaps mistakenly called tough love. I think it's probably accurate in some ways to call the will tough love. In that, because there are two things that could be said about complaining. The first is that actually, typically, most of us will stop complaining at the point where we feel deeply heard.
Yes.
And one of those things that, you know, cause the arriving of ideas like men are from Mars and women from Venus,
yeah,
is that supposedly women will listen to each other whereas men will try and fix stuff. But if we're listening without presence, or if we're all we're trying to do is fix someone else, we are not deeply hearing them.
Yes.
And so the story will come again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
Whereas if we are absolutely 100% totally present to the telling of a story from another being, that story feels so heard, we feel so heard that we can start to transmute it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can get into that transform so that we no longer need to transmit. But we've forgotten how to listen in our culture for a start. We're typically, people are so busy, at least half of them is already with, what am I going to say next?
Yes, we listen to reply, don't we? Yeah. Rather than listening to listen.
To listen, exactly. Yeah. And that for me, that's one of the profoundly beautiful things about things like sister circles.
Yes.
Is that, and well, any kind of, you know, hearing circle where you've got something like a talking stick.
Yeah.
And the invitation is, listen with the ears of your heart.
Yes.
Knowing that nobody may speak except the person with the talking stick, and that once you have finished talking, unless you've expressly said to those who are listening, I'd love your feedback, then we're finished. We're finished with you, and it's the next person with the talking stick's chance to speak, which means that because the speaker knows that she will be deeply listened to, no one's going to answer her. No one's going to try to fix her or save her or him. And nobody's ever going to repeat what's said outside of the room, because there's a commitment of total integrity, of trust and confidentiality.
Yeah.
That you can say all of it for a start, which is part of the reason why we don't feel heard often, is because we don't actually say all of it because we're going to fear judgment or that it will be repeated or whatever.
Or misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that to be listened to in silence, typically with eye contact, yeah. And the knowing that we are really hearing you, we're really holding you. That's our intention. That yeah. is the whole intention of this circle is to hold one another's truth with no judgment, no desire to fix or save. Absolute integrity and confidentiality. Mm. Ah, and you see it over and over again. People going away from those kinds of circles, feeling totally unburdened.
Yeah.
And not needing to come back next time with the very same story.
That's the pivot point.
Which is the pivot point.
Yeah. I think I did facilitate that once. I did a course in Portugal on prosperity, and there was a guy, wasn't sure why he was on the course, and then one evening he sat down and said, "You need to hear this." Which
is code for "I need to tell you this."
It definitely could. And he talked for an hour and a half about his life. Mm-hmm. And I have to confess, I was bored out of my brain. But I stayed there. Now, so this is something I want to ask you about. Can you still do it by being bored out of your brain? Because I was bored, but I stayed there. But the thing is, at the end of that, he seemed hugely healed and he didn't seem to need any more therapy at all.
Okay. Well, so my truthful answer is, if you're bored out of your brain, no. Unless your brain is able to be bored while your heart is deeply engaged with proper compassionate listening. And I have to say that my experience is that no matter how boring a story is, if you are 100% present for someone, you will not be bored.
No. Well, this was 30 years ago and I can't really remember the story, but hopefully I do better than that. But I do still find myself sometimes when I am listening, the resistance comes in and says, if you're on the phone, you say, "You could just check Facebook." And I just go, "No, I'm trying to listen." But it's still there. Mm. And if it's there and profoundly there in me who does try and do the work, what's it like for the rest of us? Mm. You know, this inability to sit and to be present and to hear, because we'll just slough off onto another TV program or another... check on social media or that kind of thing. And the world doesn't encourage us to be listeners.
It doesn't encourage us to be present at all.
No.
And we can't, you know, if we're not present, how can we engage with any of it properly?
Yeah.
You know, we can't. And that's one of the kind of, I guess, sicknesses perhaps of the, what do you call it, the sort of, social media world is this total and utter lack of encouragement to be present to what is now for more than 35 seconds.
And talking of being present, there was a brief pause there while somebody came to pick up a bureau from the garage and may probably take the Z-bed as well, so that's lovely. It is so nice meeting people who come to pick up things that you have to give. It may sound like a really trite thing to say, but there's so much furniture and stuff in our garage at the moment. We want it to go to a good home.
Yeah.
And this woman turns up, because you could hear the dogs barking as she was arriving. And, of course, she tells me a bit of her story, which is why she needs a little bit more furniture. She's got 5 children. Her new partner's got 2. So she looked at the Z-bed and said, "Oh!" You know, so we go, "Oh, well... lovely,
yes,
to have that as well. Come back." You know, and that's why giving is, I don't know, virtue is its own reward. It's lovely, isn't it? It's so beautiful to see something that was bought in love so that I could stay at my mother's because there wasn't a spare bedroom, which can now go to somebody else who can use it for love for her children.
Yeah, totally.
Gorgeous.
And that's one of the things for all that I believe the last thing I said was probably slandering social media. But actually, Facebook Marketplace just one of the best things ever? Because there's no excuse anymore for taking it to the dump, whatever it is.
No.
If someone can use it,
yes,
then Facebook Marketplace or the myriad. My brain's gone absolutely dead. I can't think of any of them.
The little village groups.
Like, you know, the Moreton Hampstead Village Hub or whatever.
Yes.
There is no excuse now for taking stuff to landfill if it could be used.
Yes.
Because someone's going to want it. Like me turning up at yours wanting a roll of plastic bags last time. You know, I haven't bought a roll of plastic bag since I don't remember when, because I'm so froth madding, you know, fiercely anti-plastic. But to have some plastic bags which have already been made and have already been bought and have already been handed down the generations.
The antique plastic bags.
I know. Yeah. Well, yes. To be able to, to, you know, to use those.
Yeah.
Whereas, if you were someone else, you could so easily have just gone, oh, well, this lot can go to the dump. I don't need it. I don't want it. I refuse to take responsibility for
Which
it.
Which is interesting. My brother said, why are you taking this stuff? Why don't you just get rid of it?
Yeah.
You know,
throw it away.
Yes.
To the magic away place.
Yes. The magic away place, which is on another dimension and doesn't hurt the planet at
Absolutely
all.
Not. Yes, yes. That's not scalding children's eyeballs in Turkey or wherever it was.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Don't want a plastic mirror, do you?
No, really not. Sorry.
Or plastic clock.
But somebody will.
Somebody will. And it's a question of allowing the time for the person to show up sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that lady was a Freegaler, you know, put things on Freegal, which is Freecycle.
Yeah.
And for this area. And I got three yeses for the bureau, but two of them didn't follow up. And it took her 2 weeks to follow up. So what happened? Well, her daughter was ill.
Yeah.
You know, so you just wait, have a little bit more patience, be present to the fact that it's going to go.
Yeah.
And I like being wealthier. I like having stuff to give.
Yeah, nice.
Because one of the things about living parsimoniously, which we did have to do for quite some time after I was ill and didn't earn, was that you couldn't be that generous with stuff. You could be generous with time, but even so, you were trying to earn sufficient to pay your rent and that kind of thing. So you can see there's the cyclical pattern you get into when you aren't prosperous, of not having stuff to give, not being able to have this generous heart, if you like.
I get it. I really get it. I do get it. And I'm glad that it's making you happy rather than weighing you down with the responsibility of the stuff, which would probably be more my response to it.
But there have been moments.
Yeah.
You can always give.
You can always give, exactly. And stuff, you have inherited stuff, therefore you have stuff to give, and hopefully all of that stuff will go to places where people needed it, and that is totally and utterly wonderful. But in our society, particularly amongst those of us who are older, there is still this identification with stuff as prosperity.
Prosperity, yes, physical
which
things.
Which it isn't.
No, it isn't, absolutely. My teacher, Warren Kenton, said something very wise once. Oh, sorry, he said many things that were very wise. Once in all those years, just the one thing that was... You have to watch your language, don't you? And one of the many wise things he said that just completely stuck. We were talking about giving blood. And he said, many can give blood, few can give spirit. And I can't give blood anymore because I had a blood cancer, so they wouldn't accept me. So it's actually lovely to say I can give spirit. And anybody can give spirit, and giving spirit includes listening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm extremely cagey about the expression giving spirit.
Yes.
But yeah.
I hear you. Yeah.
As long as we're not giving our own away, it's all good.
Yes. Giving spirit is not giving your own energy. It's completely different. Giving spirit is repleting for both of you.
Yeah. And you know, giving time, giving presence, back to presence. Giving the generosity of our loving hearts and our listening ears, giving space, giving, there are so many things we can give. Giving our prayers, giving our attention, giving our desire to make the world a better place. These are all giving our thanks, you know, that's massive.
Yes. But giving them genuinely, I have to admit, I do have a little issue with this phrase, my thoughts and prayers are with you. Because I don't believe it.
Okay. Because you're a cynical old bag.
Yes, that's cynical. No, I just think it's become a nice little
placemat. Thing to say. A
placemat.
Love it.
Put your anxiety on my placemat for a minute or two.
My thoughts and prayers are with you, which means I can dismiss you from my thoughts instantly and probably don't pray anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
In my world, it's not a thing. I'm so funny. You're bored of it and I've never heard it. Is that the thing that people say when your mum's died?
Yes, when anybody's died. That's what heads of state say when there's a tragedy, our thoughts and prayers are with the families.
Okay, and that's probably a fat lie for sure,
yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about it. When is it a fat lie and when is it actually genuine? It is a very difficult thing not to know what to say when there has been a tragedy or a bereavement. You always do take my line from what helped me, which may, of course, not help others, but you can only go with your own experience, which was when Henry died, the head of Relate, whom I was talking to because I was doing articles for Bella magazine, relationship articles, so I was talking to counsellors a lot, which was very helpful for me, I have to say, at the time. And she phoned me up directly. She said, "Maggie, I just heard about Henry. How are you doing today?" Mm. And that, for me, really worked. Mm-hmm. Because it was actually, she didn't know Henry. She couldn't be sorry that Henry was dead. She didn't know him. Mm. But she could be concerned about how I was doing that day.
Yeah.
And that is what I use as my benchmark. I mean, it may be that other people don't get that or it doesn't work. And it may be, "I'm sorry for your loss" works for people. But for me, it doesn't, because it just doesn't ring true. Because I know when somebody I don't know has died, I feel compassion for how the other person's feeling, but I can't be sorry that the person died because it was probably their time to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I have very mixed feelings about "I'm sorry for your loss" as well. Just because on the one hand, it's code. It gives us something to say in the face of the unspeakable.
Yes.
And typically I am sorry for your loss.
Yes.
I'm not necessarily sorry that they died. Maybe I didn't know them.
Yeah.
But if it's hurting you, I'm sorry that it's hurting you.
Yes.
And I'm sorry for your loss. Like I said, it's there on the shelf. We know it. We can quickly grab it. But basically in that kind of situation, typically words fail us.
Yes.
And so it's beautiful when it's clearly meant authentically.
Yes.
But when it's just trotted out as, "Actually, what's really happening is, in the face of your loss, I am feeling discomfort. I don't know what to say to you. I don't know how to be present for you," which is what it fundamentally comes down to.
Yes.
"And I am completely uncomfortable with your pain."
Thank you. You have summed that up absolutely succinctly, because sometimes when people say that it to you, it's fine. And sometimes it isn't. And I think that's basically because you can detect how much presence there is in it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we are, you know, because we're so, well, firstly, we're death averse horrendously as a culture.
Yeah.
But secondly, we're also, what is the word for it? We are made horribly uncomfortable by other people's emotions. It's like that whole stiff upper lip, the British don't cry thing.
Yes.
Is, as a result, the British have absolutely no idea how to stand in the front of someone else's pain and go, "With all my heart, I'm so sorry for your suffering."
Do you know what I heard when you said death averse? I heard death of verse.
There's no poetry left in the British soul.
No, but what I actually meant, what really was significant of me, because to be present is poetry. And to change the words actually accesses that. My mum was absolutely adamant that she wanted the phrase from Cymbeline, from poetry, from Shakespeare, at the committal.
Which was what?
"Fear no more the heat of the sun or the furious winter's rages. Thy earthly task hath done. Her not gone and take no wages." I didn't cry at the time. "Golden lads and girls all must, as chimney sweepers come to dust." Now, I don't like the chimney sweepers thing. I think he just shoved that in because he couldn't think of a
different rhyme.
But it was different. So I could actually say, even though it wasn't my mother's funeral, it was the funeral of someone, I could say that with a great depth because it was different. It wasn't the same old ashes to ashes, dust to dust, which can be trotted out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's exactly the point, which is to try and say something that resonates.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, if you are excruciated by somebody else's pain, surely then the first thing to say is, "I have no idea what to say."
Yes. I can't imagine what you're feeling now.
What, you know, what would help you in this moment?
Yes. Yes. And also to say, "How are you feeling now?" Because the assumptions of what I am feeling are very annoying.
Yeah.
And they were very annoying with Henry too. People must say, "You must feel so angry." I didn't know how to feel angry then. So I was going, no, I'm not feeling angry. Am I wrong not to feel angry? Should I be feeling? What about it?
Yes. Why does everyone think I should be angry?
Yeah. So, yes, it all comes back to presence. We can't be present, so we'll do a platitude to try and cover up the fact that we can't be present. And then, of course, if the other person isn't capable of hearing our platitude, you've got a big squabble on your hands, haven't you?
Well, yeah. And that for the other person, that it seems to me that one of the things that happens to us in grief, whatever that grief is for, is that we feel isolated.
Yes.
And that in the face of platitudes and lack of presence, that only reinforces your sense of isolation.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, whether it's the vicar or, I don't know, the bloody delivery boy, anyone that can stand there and be present to how you are in this moment, whatever it is, to stand there and face it truthfully and just be with that is somebody who is breaking your isolation and joining you on a bridge, I guess, between whatever it is you're feeling and tomorrow when it might be better.
Yeah. Or, and if it isn't better, you can still stand there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. A different world. A world on the other side of the bridge that is connection.
Yes.
And that's, to me, that's why it's so important, because it offers us, in the face of that which fells our reality, really, and causes us to feel disconnected, isolated, you know, lost, all the rest of it, all those things that go with grief or rage or whatever. Yes. And it offers us a hand in, which is therefore a hand out of the horrors of this moment.
Yes, Ian Forster, Only Connect.
Yes, which is why it's one of my favourite books of all time. Howard Zend is the business. Love that book.
So that's our recommendation for the day.
Is it really? Yeah.
No, and Cured by Jeff Rediger.
But actually, in all seriousness, if you love a bit of, what is it, 20th century or 19th century, very early 20th century maybe, turn of the century, turn of the last century fiction, there is so much richness in Howard's End. And his frontispiece says, Only Connect. And the whole book is about the connection or lack thereof between the town and the country, between the masculine and feminine, between the classes, between those who are kind of in society and those who are considered to be outside of it. It's a really rich and beautiful book. Mm. And if spiritual books aren't your thing, well, you're probably not listening in the first place, but, you know, spiritual books aren't your thing.
I love spiritual fiction or magical fiction. It's entrancing, and you learn so much from it, because you're sitting there entranced by a whole story, so it can make much more sense. One sentence can leap out at you, can't it?
Recommend me some spiritual fiction.
Next time, we're on 42 minutes.
Oh, quick, we better shut up. Okay.